Welcome back.
6 million.
Fans of pinball may know that sound from what may be the most iconic pinball game, The Addams Family. I'm Steve Potter. This is Cityscape. And if you're like me, I grew up playing pinball. In fact, Santa brought me a pinball machine for Christmas when I was in grade school, but I really haven't seen one in years. And I was totally unaware that pinball gaming really never went away. In fact, it's regaining popularity. And tomorrow, St. Louis hosts the International Flipper Pinball Association's Missouri State Championship. Welcome the association's Brian Bannon and fellow player John Miller. Welcome to Cityscape.
Welcome. Thank you.
Pinball wizards? Are you grand wizards? Or what do you refer to yourselves as?
Let me just say this. I think the real pinball wizard in the room is John over here on my left. He's an accomplished player. He finished third in the world back in 2010. So he is the man to beat in St. Louis. And tomorrow, I would say he's probably still the man to beat in Missouri. No doubt about it.
You're being too kind there, Brian.
John, I've heard the term silver ball assassins.
Well, I'm not sure about that. I do go in and I do try to annihilate my opponent. But
well, you know, as a kid, I remember like lots of pinball arcades. In fact, if my memory serves me right, there were pinballs in like the lobbies of bowling alleys, maybe even supermarkets, everywhere I'd go. It was pinball, 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 and I even remember seeing some. It's been at least 10 years since I actually saw a pinball machine, but they're still out there.
They really are, Steve. I think take a look around. There's an arcade tomorrow where we're playing the tournament. It's called the Silver Ballroom. It has roughly 18 games from various manufacturers. You have games that are 20 years old. You have some games that are less than a year old. So the championship itself will be played on these games. Manufacturers like Bally, Williams, Stern, really some nice examples of games over there.
Well, John, since you're the pinball wizard here, what's your story? Has this been an interest your entire life? Did you get into it as a kid as I did and just never stopped, or how did that happen for you?
Oh, absolutely. I think I was like 8 years old, went to Six Flags, and they had this long line of pinball machines, and I was like, okay, I think I probably got a little money from the parents, and I dropped a few quarters here and there, and it's like, hey, that's pretty neat. And shortly after, I saw an article in the paper for a Fireball pinball machine. And then I started reading about it, and at that point, I was just hooked. I just enjoyed playing and knowing that you might be able to win a free game.
Well, pinball popularity took a hit, at least to some degree, back when video games. I remember 1979, I'll never forget it, the first time I ever played a Pac-Man game. And do you remember how simplistic those are?
Sure,
now they're really simplistic, but back then I thought, wow, this is high technology. And I remember thinking, well, this is it for pinball.
Sure, just a joystick, a few buttons to push, and they didn't break either. So that helped the operators put these video games out on location, made a lot of money, and kind of pushed pinball machines right out the door.
But pinball machines, they're so much fun. There's a lot involved to them. There's sometimes multiple balls, right? There are the different sounds. Kind of explain the setup.
Well, pinball machines, you have the two flippers typically, and then you've got the blinking lights, and then each machine has its own story. So you go from the 70s, the 80s, 90s, and current machines. Each machine has its own story, and then when you get in, you try to understand how to move along that story.
We mentioned we played part of the sound from the Addams Family game. What are some of the other ones that are out there now?
The newest game out right now is Star Trek. It's based on the movies, the newer movies, not the older movies with William Shatner and Leonard Nimoy, but the newer movies with Chris Pine and such. So you'll see all sorts of different modes in there, Battle of the Klingons. You'll see have opportunity to go ahead and do the sky jump when you're trying to jump and destroy the drill. So there's all sorts of modes in these games. You get all the modes done, and you have a chance to play on, hit all the ramps for different opportunities.
Now, since I haven't seen a pinball machine in a million years, I'm just assuming they're a lot more technically advanced than the ones I used to play. Is that true?
They have, nowadays, they have what they call a DMD, a dot matrix display, and they're actually moving towards a new innovation, which is an LCD display, which can show video clips.
Now, they were a quarter, as I remember, back when I used to play them. If you find an arcade now, what are they?
They can range from 50 cents on up, 75.
Oh, that's it?
A dollar. And you can get discounts for it. You put in, say, 50 cents and then a dollar, you may receive two plates for a dollar or three plates for a dollar. Sometimes on the newer games, it might be more like three plates for $2.
And, John, as I remember it, I think the whole goal of the game is to score as many points as possible, and I guess to keep the balls in play as long as you can?
Well, sure, keep the balls in play. Each machine, your goal might be a little bit different. If you're playing in a tournament, you might just want to go for score because that's the thing that qualifies you to advance. But if you're playing casually, you might go for what they call a wizard mode, where you go in and try to defeat all the aspects or all the modes and complete all the features within a game.
That's John Miller. He's a pinball player extraordinaire. He's here with Brian Bannon, who represents the International Flipper Pinball Association. The state championships are tomorrow at the Silver Ballroom, which is down on Morganford.
Yes.
John, I would just assume that you have a number of these machines at home.
I have seven machines at home, yes.
Are any of them vintage?
At the time, no. I don't have any vintage games. My oldest game is like 1987.
Mm-hmm. Anybody ever give you a hard time over the years? I mean, pinball games are for kids. And...
No, not really. The people I talk to, I would say, you know, it's like I got some pinball machines, and they would actually say, oh, yeah, I remember that one game. And it was Addams Family.
Right. Brian, I understand that your organization, the Flipper Pinball Association, and I think there's another major one in the country, over the last, you have to tell me, 10 years or something, like the membership has just doubled, tripled, quadrupled.
Membership has exploded. You're absolutely right. Just a handful of people roughly 10 years ago, over 20,000 tournament players today in the Illinois Flipper Pinball Association.
So what's happening tomorrow? Where are these people coming from, and what's actually going to happen?
Well, tomorrow we have players from Springfield, players from Columbia, St. Louis metro area, playing a single elimination 16-player tournament. So they'll have a chance to play best 4 out of 7 games. They'll be able to select those games. They'll play 3 balls on each game. And whoever wins throughout that entire tournament will be the Missouri State champion. And that person will represent Missouri and play in the national championship later in Denver this year.
And you're in the running for this, John.
Yes, we both are.
Yeah. And where are the Nationals, and what's that event like?
Well, it's going to be in Denver, Colorado. And I think it's in May or so.
In May.
And it's going to represent the 28 states that are doing these championships, and they're all going to be held tomorrow. So some people qualified for multiple championships, and they could only choose one.
You know, we've mentioned the Star Trek game and Addams Family and others, so there are dozens and dozens of games. So do people get to pick the games they want to play, or what games will they be playing? How does that work?
Most of the people will pick the games they're most comfortable playing. So if you have your choice to play, you may want to pick a game that you know better or hope you know better than your opponent, or hope that you can play well that day. So it'll be an opportunity to see if somebody plays very well in one game. You may try to avoid that game with that player later, or hope they don't choose that when they play you.
Is there psychology involved in this, John?
Yeah. It's, you know, sometimes your other option of between choosing the game is choosing order. And by choosing order, if you choose second, then you get an opportunity to go last, meaning the other players already finished their game, and then you can adjust your strategy accordingly.
So are some games more difficult than others, or is it just maybe more difficult for a certain person?
Some games could be more difficult. Some people are more of a flow-type player. Some people more of a, you know, catch the ball and slow it down a lot.
I read somewhere that pinball – I just want your reaction to this. Pinball blends technique, strategy, guile, stamina – and there's even a physical element. Can you comment on that?
It sounds like it was written by a pinball player. certainly, all those things are in there. If stamina, for instance, if you're in a long game, you're hitting the same shots over and over again, you're going to get tired. So if you're not in any kind of shape at all, or if you're not available to hit those shots, you will miss some shots because you're getting tired.
What are some common mistakes, let me put it another way. John, what advice can you give the novice player? I read somewhere also that someone was saying one of the common mistakes people make is putting both flippers up at the same time. That was just one thing. Anything come to mind?
Right. That would be – if you're just beginning to play, some people will think that you'll just naturally react to hit both fingers at the same time to flip both flippers simultaneously, which you don't want to do because it'll create a larger gap between the flippers. And other times beyond that, if you do independent flipper action, you don't have to flip all the time. When the balls come to the flipper, you can just let it hit the flipper and it'll bounce off to the other flipper, giving you a little more control and have the ball a little slower.
So what's a good score? Does that depend on the game?
It absolutely depends on the game. There's a game out right now called Wizard of Oz. A big score on that would be roughly 1,000,000 points.
A million?
1,000,000. Whereas on a game like Attack from Mars, I think John scored over 30 billion points on that one before.
That's amazing. And is this open to the public? Can people come and watch? Is it too late to compete?
The tournament is actually restricted to the 16 qualifiers. The qualification
so
happened.
So they've worked their way up.
Right. It was held over the 2013 year, and these are the top 16. But there's also a charity challenge, and it's called
Kids Fight Cancer Charity Challenge.
And that's open to anybody, and there will be a machine set up, and it will be a fundraiser with all funds going towards that charity.
And all that's everything is tomorrow.
Everything's yep. tomorrow. And the good thing about that, Steve, real quickly, is all the funds that are made tomorrow through the charity challenge will be matched by Jersey Jack Pinball and Stern Pinball.
That's correct. Hmm.
So is the pinball world a small world? John, do you know who your competition is? Have you sized them up? Do you know their history?
You know, after playing and over the years, you go to events. You go to the events outside of your local market. You go to, like, Springfield, or you go to, like, Pittsburgh or Seattle, and you meet people, and you get to learn their tendencies and their styles.
Mm-hmm. How passionate do these people get? I mean, there won't be any fights or anything.
I don't anticipate any fights. I would say there'll be some people that will be emotional, and they'll be shoving a few machines around.
Really?
They won't lose their temper, but they'll want to.
Hey, if I wanted to buy a machine or take one home, what are we looking at?
How bad do you want it?
That bad, huh?
Well, machines can vary in price. Some of the cheaper games can be $500 to $1,000. Some of the more expensive games are over $8,000.
Really? Have you got some also?
I do have some pinball machines.
How many places are there in town to play that you know of?
Well, there's right now three major locations, CP Pinball, the Silver Ballroom, and Orbit Pinball Lounge. But there's also about 190 or so machines scattered throughout the city at like 60 locations.
The International Flipper Pinball Association is hosting the Missouri State Championships. That's tomorrow at the Silver Ballroom on Morgan Ford in St. Louis, if you'd like more information. And don't forget about the Kids Fight Cancer benefit, which is open to anyone, right?
Yes. Yes.
Go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page, and we'll have a link to the Silver Ballroom's website. One final thing I was just thinking, and I told you I haven't played pinball in 1,000,000 years since I was fairly young, really. And I remember it – am I wrong? I remember it just being a guy thing. I don't remember my sisters playing or any girls that I know, and I'm sure that's changed. But
we have pinball leagues right now. And there's a pinball league at the ballroom on Wednesday nights, as well as CP Pinball. And there are women players, and they are very good.
Hmm. Well, you know, St. Louis now is like the center for chess in the world, so who knows, someday.
There you go.
We could be the pinball capital, maybe. Brian Bannon represents the International Flipper Pinball Association, and John Miller has also been our guest today. He's a professional. Can I say professional? You win any money?
I think I've won a dollar once.
You're a professional. John Miller, thank you, gentlemen, for being here, and best of luck in the tournament.
Right, thank you.
Thank you.
Nancy Kranzberg has now, we joined Nancy Kranzberg. She has some thoughts about site-specific art.
A lot of artworks are hard to categorize. Just the other day, I was giving a group a tour of our world-renowned Lawmeyer Sculpture Park. I told them that Lawmeyer had many works of art that were traditionally placed around the park, such as Ernest Trova's Falling Man and Mark de Souvereau's works. But Lawmeyer is also very famous for its site-specific works of art. Beverly Pepper's Cromlech Glen and Earthwork and Mary Miss's Swimming Pool Complex were early major commissions. According to Dana Turkovich, Lawmeyer's curator, Lawmeyer was on the ground floor having commissions such as these. Site-specific work is not transportable like a typical painting or sculpture in a museum, but is created by an artist for a specific site and its surroundings. Site-specific works can include dance or music or artworks in other disciplines. M. Pirro, director of St. Lou Fringe, says, site-specific projects also challenge artists to think seriously about the in-the-now relevance of their work. When pieces are brought to life outside of a stage, gallery, or venue, they become that much more visceral and relevant to our times. Our own Sarah Frost, award-winning visual artist, recently created a site-specific work for Gallery 210 at the University of Missouri St. Louis. Shannon Fitzgerald, executive director of the Rochester Art Center, describes the piece entitled Sight. It is a monumental curved swath that bisects Gallery 210's space to create an architectural barrier. The jutting structure references the human body and invites the viewer to explore the enigmatic materiality and meaning of leftovers. This precise geometric cut is comprised of hundreds of bamboo poles joined by hand-tied white fabric lashings organized structurally to resemble the still commonly used bamboo scaffolding so prevalent throughout parts of Asia. CAM, the Contemporary Art Museum St. Louis, just closed an exhibition entitled Place is the Space, featuring seven artists known for their consistent production of site-specific work, as well as their ability to address what Brad Klopfel, founding principal of Allied Works Architecture, tried to express in his building at 3750 Washington Boulevard, which is now 10 years old. These artists addressed what Klopfel identifies as key aspects of the building: boundary, intersection, public accessibility, scale, surface, and transparency. There was one piece that caught my ears, a work entitled Audible Interruptions, an audible work in the hall and even the restrooms of the building by poet Jessica Barron and artist Kevin Harris. When I think of other internationally famous artists who have created site-specific works on a very grand scale, I think of Christo and his wrapped buildings and islands, Robert Smithson and his spiral jetty near Roselle Point in the Great Salt Lake, and Olafur Eliasson's waterfalls, which he created in New York City, all come to mind. These works, of course, have been documented on film. Site-specific works have certainly knocked art off the pedestal and can challenge our perception of the definition of art. I'm Nancy Kranzberg.
Nancy Kranzberg has been involved in the arts community for some 30 years on numerous arts-related boards. And next week on Cityscape, we'll talk with Ken Page about his participation in the Gaslight Cabaret Festival. And join Don Marsh Monday for St. Louis on the Air, when he'll talk about the history of St. Louis as the city observes the 250th anniversary of its founding. Cityscape is produced by Mary Edwards and Alex Hoyer, with assistance from Camille Phillips, Aaron Dorr, and Amanda Hunnickfort. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Cityscape is made possible in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Cityscape is a production of St. Louis Public Radio 90.7 KWMU. I'm Steve Potter. Hope you'll join us next week.